From Illinois Public Media, this is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. The heat index was well above 100 degrees across much of Illinois last week, and climate change is going to make those extreme heat days much more common. A new report looks at how much that will cost people who work outdoors. We'll talk about it later this hour. But first, Illinois lawmakers are returning to Springfield for a rare summer session of the Illinois General Assembly. Two main topics are on the agenda, maybe. A new set of legislative maps for the Illinois State Senate and House of Representatives, and a potential major update of the state's energy policy. Joining me now are three reporters who've been covering these issues. Rachel Hinton is chief political reporter at the Chicago Sun-Times. Rachel, thank you for joining us again.
Yeah, thanks for having me back.
Hannah Meisel is State House editor for public radio stations across Illinois. She's based at our partner station, NPR Illinois WUIS in Springfield. Hannah, good morning. Good to have you back.
Glad to be here, Brian.
And Dan Guarino is clean energy reporter who covers the Midwest for Inside Climate News. Dan, welcome to the 21st.
Good to be here.
Listeners, as always, we invite you to join our conversation. Our lines are open at 800-222-9455. That's 800-222-9455. If you have any questions about what the General Assembly is getting up to this week, 800-222-9455. You can also tweet us at 21st Show. That's at 21st Show. All right, Hannah, I'm going to begin with you. It just briefly, sort of broad strokes, what are we expecting from this legislative, I guess, special session, if you will?
Right. Well, the stated purpose is for lawmakers to come back and tweak the legislative maps that they passed in May. And I should say more accurately that Democrats pushed through in May because every Republican voted against it. Because as listeners might remember, the usual census data that lawmakers work off of would have come out in April had it not been for the pandemic. But that data was delayed. And now we have the data finally, and it shows that what lawmakers passed might not pass constitutional muster. And so it was always the plan, but also there's more pressure because a federal judge recently said, hey, you might want to do this or else, you know, risk having the power taken away from you. And then the other thing is we have this massive climate and energy bill that's been hanging in the balance since May. And, there's still not a clear picture about what's going to happen here.
Yeah, since May, maybe even since May of last year or the May of the year before that, depending on how far back you are. All right, well, let's put a pin in energy for now. Rachel, can you give us a little more detail? As Hannah said, lawmakers already drew these new district maps. What were some of the problems with the districts they drew once we actually got the census information?
Well, population estimates that they used or got from the ACS data earlier in the spring or summer doesn't necessarily line up with the actual population figures that came out from the Census Bureau when they released their data earlier this month or in the middle of this month. Republicans naturally latched onto that and said, look, you know, there's the range in certain districts is, I think, like 90,000 off of, you know, what the actual population figures are. This proves, you know, what Republicans have been saying, that, you know, the maps are unconstitutional, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. Obviously, you know, that part, whether or not it's unconstitutional, is still being decided in court. But I believe that, you know, since legislators are coming back tomorrow, there are enough differences in population estimates and actual figures that legislators will have to redraw these boundaries. Democrats say or have said in their, you know, redistricting committee meetings that they haven't drawn the maps. They're still seeking public input. They want the public input. Republicans, you know, yet again are saying the maps are already drawn. Some of them have said that they've already seen them with their own eyes. So it's kind of a repeat of what we saw earlier this summer when the first maps were drawn or were about to be drawn. I'll be curious or interested to see if, you know, it's basically a repeat of what happened last time. I'm sure it will be. Democrats will likely overwhelmingly vote for whatever they decide to, however they decide to redraw these maps. And I'm sure Republicans will overwhelmingly vote against it and, you know, speak against it too.
Yeah. You know, Hannah, I wonder, you know, we often talk about these issues in terms of Democrats versus Republicans, but Democrats have supermajorities in Illinois. Are there fights within the Democratic Party itself about how to draw these districts, you know, the Black caucus versus the Latino caucus, say, and how representation is handled in, you know, in within the Democratic Party?
Oh, make no mistake, those fights are happening, but the caucuses are doing the best that they can to keep that all under wraps and present a united front publicly. But certainly, I mean, you know, one of the big estimates that was borne out from this, you know, decennial census was that the Latino population in Illinois would grow. And of course, that's what happened, you know, based on both true numbers and also the way that the census questions were asked were tweaked that yielded, you know, more accurate answers than we've had in the past. And so, you know, especially in the city of Chicago, although not as much as I think folks were expecting, but the Black population dropped a bit. And so there was, you know, this tension between the Black caucus and the Latino caucus that Latinos felt as if they wanted more accurate representation, more ways, more opportunities to see themselves represented in Springfield. And so that's definitely one thing. But also, you know, before this remap process kicked off, you know, we had a lot of progressive Democrats say that they wanted an independent map making process. And when it became clear to them that it wasn't going to happen, you know, they jumped on board. But certainly, you know, there was some uneasiness with the process that played out in the spring and the process that will continue to play out this week and then into the fall when we get into congressional remapping. But, you know, we have a lot of communities of interest, community advocacy groups that say, hey, we're not being fairly represented here. For example, last week, one of the large Muslim American groups in Chicago testified at one of these redistricting redux committees. And they said, hey, we are still being completely left off because, you know, for forever, the U.S. Census Bureau has not classified Arab American or Middle Eastern as any sort of race or ethnicity category. And therefore, those folks are kind of forced to select white or something else that doesn't truly reflect their group. And, you know, then they get left off for another 10 years.
Yeah, MENA, I think, is what I've heard. That Middle Eastern North African is sort of a rising demographic group you hear about. All right, before we turn to energy, just last question on this, Rachel Hinton of the Sun-Times. The governor had campaigned on vowing to veto any map that was not fair, right? I'm paraphrasing here. And yet he swallowed hard. It was certainly not a bipartisan map. He's expected to do that again, I gather?
Yeah, I would assume so. And I'm sure he's going to get the same pushback from Republicans and the interest groups that we've heard at these committee meetings. It seems like Democrats, their main talking point on this is making sure that districts are fair and that, you know, they have the proper representation, or making sure that basically the population figures within the districts that they're creating are accurate, are aligned with census figures and whatnot. So I think that so long as they feel like the districts they're drawing do accurately represent people or are fair to people, I think that we'll probably still see Pritzker sign these maps.
Yeah, fair is in the eye of the beholder, I guess.
All right, yeah, let me take a moment. Fair in quotes, I should say.
Yeah, exactly. All right, this is the 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. We're talking about the special session of the Illinois General Assembly, currently scheduled for Tuesday of this week, although one reporter who writes a newsletter for Insiders this morning urged people to pack some extra clothes, so it may go a little longer. We're speaking with Rachel Hinton, chief political reporter at the Chicago Sun-Times, Hannah Meisel, who's the State House editor for NPR Illinois, and Dan Guarino, who is clean energy reporter who covers the Midwest for Inside Climate News. And Dan, I want to talk now about this energy debate in Illinois. And setting aside the negotiations taking place now, can you just set a baseline for us? What is happening out there, particularly in the clean energy sector? I know you've been reporting on solar in particular.
So the stage was set for this with the bill passed in 2016, a landmark bill called the Future Energy Jobs Act, that was this big expansion of state support for renewable energy, in particular, rooftop solar and kind of neighborhood solar was getting all kinds of money that it didn't get before. And with that, Illinois was telling solar developers, move to Illinois, or if you're in Illinois already, you should expand. But there were some design flaws in this bill where it basically spent all of the incentive money or close to it really, really quickly. So all of these solar companies were encouraged to expand or to relocate, and they ran out of money. The state ran out of money. And what we've been seeing these last year and a half in Illinois is this rising sense of alarm from the mainly small businesses that do rooftop solar installations, saying that this is this kind of incentive-based economy where people expect that incentives will be approved or will be reapproved at some point, but there are none because they've run out. And the state government has indicated, the legislators have indicated, they're going to pass something at some point, but they just haven't done it. So it's led to this really difficult summer, really difficult 2021. And of course, 2020 was no picnic with the coronavirus for solar entrepreneurs. This group that many of whom came here because of what this 2016 bill said it would do.
Yeah. And people were talking about a solar cliff, right? Sort of after the fiscal cliff in Washington. And you reported that 313 rooftop solar projects statewide in a 3-month period this year, compared with almost 3,000 a year earlier. That's about 10-11%.
Yeah. Well, it's so the numbers getting the numbers that show this, of course, require probably like 20 minutes worth of caveats. But bottom line,
okay,
is,
we don't have 20 minutes. So,
yeah, exactly. Bottom line. So the 10-second version is projects are way, way down. And that number refers to projects that are being done through this state program. But the numbers from the from state agencies that follow this bear out the anecdotal evidence that we're hearing from solar installers, that their business is down at least half, more than half. They're needing to lay off workers. They're needing to kind of stretch out their income as far as they can because they don't know when this legislation is going to pass. And the thing is, the legislation is agreed upon. The solar language, the renewable energy language, was agreed upon a while ago. It's kind of just waiting to pass because of other issues that are being debated.
Okay. And Hannah Meisel, one of those other issues is nuclear power. Can you give us a brief update on where things stand in terms of that aspect of the energy debate?
That's right. That's another thing that's been settled for months, though. That was what was expected to be the most intense piece of negotiations. And it was during the spring. But basically, Exelon, that owns 6 nuclear power plants up in the northern part of Illinois, has threatened to close 2, perhaps even 3 of their unprofitable plants. Of course, 2 are already get subsidies from ratepayers based on that 2016 legislation Dan was talking about. But Exelon is they're not kidding around. They are going to close 1 of their plants later in September,
yeah,
if we don't get this passed.
I saw where Congressman Adam Kinzinger had made a request of President Biden to invoke, I think, the Defense Production Act, which mm-hmm. all of us are now familiar with from COVID and medical supplies and vaccines last year. And now he's urging him to do that to keep these power plants online. Dan, one of the things that is not settled then are these 2 major coal plants, right? One's the municipal power plant in Springfield. The other is called Prairie State. Briefly, what is the holdup there?
So of the 2, the one that I follow the most closely is Prairie State, which is a nationally known and nationally significant power plant because it was one of the last really big power plants to get built it was becoming clear that coal-fired electricity was not economically competitive. This was one of the last ones out of the gate. The governor and others, environmental groups, would like to see a phase out of coal power. The problem is that Prairie State serves a whole bunch of municipal utilities, which is city-owned utilities across several states. And they have spent a lot of money on Prairie State to buy shares of the electricity that comes from it, and they stand to lose. So that is leading to this uproar from some of those city governments, which created this roadblock. It also is leading to some backlash in organized labor, and it seemed like a speed bump, but it turned out to be this thing that has in many ways prevented this larger deal from coming together.
Okay, we need to take a break. We're going to continue our discussion and wrap up our preview of the special legislative session taking place this week in Springfield. And then we're going to continue talking about the climate and a new report that came out saying that Illinois is going to be subject to a lot more extreme heat days in the coming decades and how that is going to affect people who primarily work outdoors. That is all coming up after a short break. You're listening to The 21st. Stay with us. This is The 21st. I'm Brian Mackey. If you're just tuning in, we're previewing this week's special session of the Illinois General Assembly. State legislators are expected to come back and vote on a couple of important matters. Well, at least one important matter. They may vote on another. The one is a new set of maps for the Illinois State House of Representatives and Illinois State Senate. They were, as we heard earlier, already drawn earlier this year. And then the census data finally came out, and they need to be redrawn to meet constitutional muster, I guess. And then we're also talking about the possibility of a massive overhaul of the state's energy policy with subsidies for Exelon and its nuclear power plants, the clean energy industry, and determining the future of a couple of coal-fired power plants, one in Springfield, the other called Prairie State down in the Metro East, but that supplies power to a number of municipalities across Illinois. We're talking about this with Dan Guarino, who covers the Midwest for Inside Climate News, Hannah Meisel, State House Editor with NPR Illinois, and Rachel Hinton, Chief Political Reporter at the Chicago Sun-Times. And Hannah, these coal plants seem to be the major stumbling block here, and it strikes me that this is one of the first big contentious pieces of legislation to come up with three relatively new power brokers in Springfield, right? Governor Pritzker, Senate President Don Harmon, House Speaker Chris Welch. Do you have a sense of the power dynamics in this debate?
Yeah, it's definitely, you know, the governor had a very easy, I guess easy is not the right word, but he had a first legislative session that was, you know, lots of momentum behind him, both Democrats and Republicans. And then, of course, last year was the depths of COVID. And, you know, this is definitely a very challenging piece of legislation. It doesn't just cut right down the middle, like a lot of other pieces of legislation in Springfield. You know, it's been really interesting to watch Senate President Don Harmon and the governor kind of be at loggerheads over this for at least the last 3+ months, with the Senate president. You know, he rejects this claim, but folks saying, oh, he's siding with the coal-fired power plants, which is just not exactly true. He's mostly siding with labor and also his caucus, which is, it's a lot of folks who are loyal to labor in a way that, you know, the House has become a lot more progressive under new House Speaker Chris Welch. Chris Welch has mostly stayed out of this fight, but a lot of people are, you know, asking him to, you know, lead and take a side and, you know, do some brokering. But up to this point, he's been kind of unwilling to do that. And it's been interesting to watch. And the governor has been, you know, he's mostly sided with the environmental groups who, you know, in turn have doubled down with kind of his protection knowing that he's on their side. And so both sides, organized labor and environmental groups, have dug in over the last 3 months since lawmakers left Springfield.
And Dan, just to put a pin or put a button on this, pick your metaphor, on this conversation, can you put in context for us the importance to environmental groups and the climate of setting closure, definitive closure dates on these two plants in either a statewide or regional and international, if you want to, context?
Well, when you look at the kinds of emissions reductions that the U.S. is going to need in order to meet the goals of international agreements, in order to do what climate researchers say is necessary. Coal-fired power, the idea of still burning substantial amounts of coal 20 years from now it makes achieving a lot of those goals much more difficult. The same goes for natural gas power, but that is not as emissions intensive from the power plants as coal is. So, yeah, you basically are making things much, much more difficult to achieve emissions targets and to just do a transition to clean energy within the state. If some of these, Prairie State's not an old plant, but a lot of the other fossil plants are really old, if they are continuing to operate, far into the future.
Okay, I want to end our conversation, Rachel, coming back to you and end with redistricting, which is the one thing we know theoretically for sure that lawmakers are going to be taking care of this week. But one thing about that they won't be doing are congressional districts. And I think that that's really sort of the thing that gets people pulling out their popcorn and eager to hear what is going to happen with the Illinois General Assembly. There's national attention on it. Congressman Adam Kinzinger's district, will it be kept? Will it be eliminated? We have a lot of listeners who are represented by him, as well as Congressman Rodney Davis in Central Illinois. Rachel, do you have a sense of the timeline for the congressional districts?
I believe, or I would expect for that to come up during the scheduled days of veto session in October. But I think so far people are mostly focusing, or legislators that I've spoken to are focusing on this remap. One headache at a time is what I've been told recently. But I do think that aside, I think that people are really thinking about the congressional remaps and how they want to shape those districts and whether or not they want to allow someone like Representative Kinzinger or Representative Davis to stay in those districts. What would be politically advantageous for Democrats? I think that's really driving the thought process and the conversations right now, what that will look like, in terms of maps, in terms of legislative boundaries, obviously we have yet to see, but I would expect that to come up in October.
Yeah, and the pundits all say that the map will not be favoring Democrats in the 2022 congressional election, so they're looking for every advantage they can. Okay. Illinois might be an opportunity. All right, Rachel Hinton, chief political reporter at the Chicago Sun-Times, Hannah Meisel, State House editor for NPR Illinois, and Dan Guarino with Midwest clean energy reporter for Inside Climate News. Rachel, Hannah, Dan, thanks so much for being with us today on the 21st.
Thank you.
Thanks.